Welcome to this inaugural episode of The Sat Signal here on Unemployable. This is a brand new podcast designed specifically to help you understand Bitcoin better and to keep you abreast of the news in the Bitcoin marketplace around the world. Now, holding Bitcoin is not the easiest thing to do. It's a big step to go and buy it in the first place when you first start your journey, and it's even harder to hold on to it. And your ability to hold on to this asset is going to be in direct proportion to how well you know what you own. So my mission here with this channel is to help you do that. Now, you would have seen at the start of this video the financial disclaimer, and I really want to highlight that again. This is not financial advice. I'm a guy on the internet. I'm sharing what I believe to be true about Bitcoin, but you have to make your own decision on these things. You can't just rely on what I say or anybody says. It's important that you do your own research. For those of you that are regular subscribers to Unemployable, I've tried to make it as easy as possible to find the Bitcoin-related posts. And the way I've done that is by making a thumbnail that stands out from everything else. So if you want to see the Bitcoin post and the Sat Signal show, just look for the big green Bitcoin right in the middle of the thumbnail when you get to Unemployable. That will help you navigate quickly to that content if that's what you're after. So one of the key pieces of this show is going to be taking questions from you guys in the audience. If you drop them in the comments below, I will pick a question for every show and I'm going to do a deep dive into answering that question so I can help you understand what you want to know about Bitcoin. Because I will be the first to admit, it is not easy to understand Bitcoin. This is a journey that takes a lot of time to truly get your head around for most of us. And this week, the comment that came in on one of the posts is this: I'm interested in diversifying into Bitcoin, but I feel that I am too late. This is such a common question, guys. It's such a common belief. They feel like, you know, Bitcoin's at over $100,000 as I record this today. So what I should do is try find a coin that's $2 or $5 or whatever else, not really understanding why being in Bitcoin today, in my opinion, is still very early. So first of all, what you must understand is that the price of any given coin is not indicative of really anything. What you really want to know of any of these coins is how many of these tokens are on issue. And you multiply the number of tokens on issue by the price that's being asked together, and that puts a value on the entire project. It's exactly the same as how shares work in companies. There's a number of shares on issue, there's a price per share, and you combine those two things together, you get what's called a market capitalization. And as it relates to Bitcoin today, at about $100,000 per coin, when you add up all the coins that are out there, it gives the market cap or the total value of Bitcoin as an asset at about $2 trillion. So it's really important that you understand that, because if you're trying to assess whether $100,000 is too much or whether it's cheap or whatever, you have to start comparing it against that $2 trillion market cap. So remember that. So what I want to do is I want to give you just a few examples of why I believe that Bitcoin is still underpriced, considerably underpriced, at $100,000 a coin, which, as I said, might sound crazy to many people. But I'm only going to cover two story vectors. There's actually a whole lot of story vectors that I could have chosen to illustrate this point, but I'm just going to do two. One I'm going to do very, very quickly because I'm going to do as a standalone video, which is gold versus Bitcoin. And the one I'm going to dive into a little bit today is property versus Bitcoin, because I know a lot of people, especially when I'm starting this channel, are Australians watching this, and Australians love property. But I want to give you a case or something to think about as to why I think we're going to see more and more money moving across from property to Bitcoin. So let's start firstly with understanding how the Bitcoin valuation of $2 trillion fits into the overall picture of global assets. So if you add up all the different types of assets in the world, if you add up bonds, if you add up equities, if you add up real estate, if you add up all the cash or the fiat currency that is floating around the world, there's about $800 trillion of assets globally that are parked in these vehicles. Now, like I said just before, Bitcoin, its total value of all the coins on issue today is $2 trillion. So to put this another way, if all of the assets of the world were represented in a single $100 bill, the Bitcoin component of the global asset pool would represent about 26 cents out of that $100 global asset pool. And if you think about these global assets as competing with each other for a share of global wealth, that's when you start to really think about whether or not you think Bitcoin over time is going to take up more and more of that global asset pool. So for example, will money go from property to Bitcoin? Will money go from gold investors to Bitcoin? Will money flow out of the bond market to Bitcoin? These are all very real questions. And when you look at those global asset classes, the fastest growing, the best performing asset of all of them globally by a mile has been Bitcoin for 15 years straight. In fact, it's been the number one performing asset in the world since it was born every single year in its 16-year history, except for three. Right? So you've got this tiny little asset, $2 trillion, even at $100,000 a coin, it's still only worth $2 trillion as an asset, competing in a marketplace of $800 trillion of wealth and of money that needs to find a home. And it's also not only the best performing, but the fastest growing. It's gone from zero to $2 trillion in just 16 years. When you compare it to real estate, gold, and all these other asset classes, it is a baby. So much of what we really, as Bitcoiners, so much of what we believe is that we believe, and you'll see it in today's podcast, that Bitcoin will continue to go up over time as more and more people start to realize and start to understand the real reason that Bitcoin exists. And there's many, but I'm going to touch on a few. So with that context in mind, let's start with gold versus Bitcoin. So to give you some context, gold today, all the above ground gold at today's price, if you added up all the ounces of gold at today's price of gold per ounce, there's about $20 trillion of gold, give or take, that is available. So the market cap or the valuation of that asset is gold. Now, when you compare that to Bitcoin, it's actually 1/10 of the size of gold. Bitcoin is 2 trillion, gold is 20. So the question you might ask with this one particular story when we're trying to evaluate the value of Bitcoin is it as good as gold? Is it better than gold? Is it worse than gold? Now, I can think of a whole bunch of reasons that I think that Bitcoin is better than gold, but I want to make this point up front. Gold people, or what we call gold bugs, gold people and Bitcoin people share a lot of common beliefs about the world. You see, back in the day, gold was really valuable, and it's still valuable today. It's because it was a proof of work technology for money. What does that mean? It means that unlike fiat currency, where a government can just push a button and print it, if you actually want to go get gold, you have to go and you have to dig it out of the ground. You have to exert real resources, real effort, and then the reward is this physical property called gold. And gold turned out to be such an effective store of value over such a long period of time because of its properties. It didn't break down easily. It was easily divisible. You could carry it around to a certain degree. And it was a reliable, difficult to get, scarce, physical commodity. Now, if you look at that and then you look at Bitcoin, Bitcoin, in my opinion, is better than gold for so many reasons. The gold bugs will say, well, you know, you can't go down the street and spend Bitcoin. We can't really do that with gold either. People who buy gold never really usually touch it. They actually buy a paper form of gold. So they buy a gold ETF or they buy, you know, into a vault, but they never see it. They buy it because fundamentally they believe that gold will go up in value. Bitcoin is the same for a lot of investors as well. But the difference is that Bitcoin can be transported easily. It's much safer. It's much more secure. It's something that has a lot more privacy attached to it as well. There's a whole bunch of reasons. But what I would encourage you to do, rather than me convincing you, is get the book, The Bitcoin Standard, and go down that rabbit hole and start to really deep dive on the history of money, because in that book, The Bitcoin Standard by Saif Dean Ammous, he does a whole book, about 80% of it is on the history of money. And he's not anti-gold at all. He explains why gold is such an amazing commodity, but then he goes on to explain why Bitcoin is even better. So once you've done your reading and once you've done your own independent thinking about it, ask yourself, do you think it's possible that Bitcoin could become worth more than gold? And if you do, if you think that's true, then Bitcoin would have to 10x from here just to become worth what gold is. And that is only still a tiny piece of the $800 trillion pie that we are competing for as Bitcoiners. So moving on from gold, I want to talk about property. I personally believe that gold investors, more and more gold investors, are starting to realize that Bitcoin is superior in many ways to Bitcoin. And you can see it, the Bitcoin is superior to gold in many ways. And you can see this also reflected in the ETFs. When BlackRock launched their ETF, which is an exchange traded fund, when BlackRock made it possible for big funds and people to, instead of going through the process of buying Bitcoin, just go to the stock exchange, buy a share in a BlackRock ETF, which was direct exposure to Bitcoin, meaning that you put your dollar in and they would go and buy a dollar of Bitcoin. That was the most successful ETF launch in history. I think in the first year, there was more money invested in Bitcoin ETFs than were invested in gold ETFs over 20 years. That's how much the market voted for the power of Bitcoin. But now if we move our attention over from gold versus Bitcoin, which is one example of money moving from one asset to class to the other, think about property and Bitcoin. I believe that more and more real estate investors are going to be looking for new homes for their money in the coming period of time. I want to play this clip, which was on A Current Affair in Australia just recently. Just watch why there is such counterparty risk and so much expense and so much uncertainty around buying real estate that is physical property. If the government changes the rules on you and starts taxing you differently, unlike Bitcoin, you can't just up and move your business or move your property or move your home. There's a whole process of getting rid of it, and you're going to be getting rid of it into a market with these new rules in place. Watch this.
The cost of everything is going up, but one of Angie's bills has jumped by more than 2,000%. And it's not a mistake. He's paying for someone else's bad decisions.
Now, before we go on, I just want to point out here what she said. The price of everything is going up, and the guy we're about to see is paying for somebody else's bad decisions. Now, for everybody watching this, I think you can relate to the fact that inflation has gone through the roof. Why do we have inflation? It's because governments print money. When COVID happened, they pumped money into the system and all this money felt great as soon as it went in. But then not long after, we had inflation. This is another reason why Bitcoin is so superior to fiat currencies. Now think about what I said. There's trillions of dollars tied up in fiat currencies and people are starting to go, hang on, fiat currencies aren't good. They're becoming worthless more and more and more each year. More and more of those people are converting into their fiat currencies into Bitcoin, which is why Bitcoin partly is going up in price. But inflation is the reason that Bitcoin is important. But let's get back to property.
It feels like we're here working year after year just to generate money for the state government.
Ever felt that way yourself? Feels like we are working year after year just to make money for the state government or the federal government? We are all feeling this, right? Taxes are going up, cost of living's going up. Let's continue.
You don't know Angie Romas, but you've seen his work. It lights up the MCG.
We're talking about the columns for the Southern Cross Station. We're talking about the big girders for the bridges on the East Link Freeway.
While we walk past it every day, Angie's wondering how many days he's got left.
This tax is going to increase in the next year. Every February, it'll go up by $50,000.
It's called land tax, and the Victorian government aimed to make a pretty penny out of it to help curb the state's soaring debt.
So here we have an asset class where millions of people have invested into it just in Australia, and probably billions of people, I don't know the numbers, globally, where we have a counterparty, right? We have governments who can enforce taxes on your property. And if you don't like it, you either have to put up or shut up, right? You either sell it and move out. And this is what's happening in the Victorian property market right now in Australia. The market has taken a huge hit as they've changed the tax incentives and they've changed the taxes. This is a reason that more and more people who own real estate are starting to sit down with a calculator and go, hang on a minute, by the time I pay my land taxes, by the time I have to comply with all of these laws, which are always changing, and tenancy laws that are always changing, it doesn't make sense based on the return for me to own real estate. Now, you guys who know me know I've sold all my real estate except one property which I co-own with somebody else, but I've sold all my real estate in Australia for these reasons. Let's get back to the video.
Angie is on 4 acres. 10 years ago, his land tax bill was $8,700. This year, it's a whopping $203,600. That's a 2,240% increase. What small business can possibly absorb that?
And the government is just taking money for nothing. We don't get anything for it.
So when you start thinking about Bitcoin and a use case, you must start thinking about it in the context of money competing for a place to live, or assets competing for a place to live. When investors start to see that the rules are being changed against them because their assets sit within a system, like you can't relocate physical property like houses and buildings and so on, have to be within a jurisdiction of a government. Whereas with Bitcoin, if you have not all of your assets, but some of your assets in Bitcoin, and you don't like the rules at home where you are, you can leave. You can take it with you and you can leave easily without having to sell it, and you can do it in a moment's notice. Let's carry on, because it's not just this guy who's a business owner who's now had this massive increase in his taxation. There's also residential investors as well. Let's watch on.
And the hikes to land tax aren't just affecting Victorian small businesses. Landlords have been priced out too.
My land tax has more than doubled.
Father of four, Eric Chen, works as an accountant, but even he can't crunch the numbers and keep them viable.
This is my first investment property. It will be probably my last.
This is not just in Australia. This is all over the world. We are starting to see, like in the US, property prices have come off massively. There is only so much that people can pay. Now, I'm not predicting that property prices are going to go down. I'm not even talking about that. What I'm talking about is the fact that right now, in a global asset pool of $800 trillion, that money is starting to look for, in my opinion, is constantly looking for where is it going to be treated best. The bond market has been under massive pressure. Nobody's been buying bonds. The equities market, yep, that's been a good performer, but real estate is getting tighter and tighter and tighter and starting to make less and less sense to more and more investors. So when you think about this little asset over here in the corner of that dollar bill, or that $100 bill that currently only represents 26 cents in every $100 that's been allocated to it, do you believe that more property investors are going to allocate to Bitcoin? Do you believe that more gold investors are going to start to allocate to more Bitcoin? Because if you do, then in my opinion, we're going to see a continued growth in this asset over time. So I hope that answers your question about you thinking that Bitcoin at $100,000 is too late, is too high. Guys, if you want to test this, walk out on the street and ask people what they know about Bitcoin, and you will find that almost nobody is even thinking about it. You've got to understand that these assets, when they emerge, and this is what we're witnessing here, is the birth of a new asset class. This happens maybe once every 100 or 200 years. It's not very common at all. And the closest thing that is akin to the birth of Bitcoin is actually the internet. Not that the internet's an asset, but when you look at the technology path and you look at when that happened, it took years before we had the base layer. And then we started to see applications layered on top of that base layer. Right now, we are still at that base layer level, and we're just starting to see the layer one technologies come on top of Bitcoin, and then all of a sudden, it's like a hockey stick growth like this. So we are very, very early. Many people believe that Bitcoin will take a significant chunk of the global asset pie, because sooner or later, people are going to wake up and realize that with Bitcoin, there is no counterparty risk. It is the only asset on earth that is truly finite. You can't print more of it. You can't make more of it. There is no counterparty risk. There's no government. There's no voting populace that are just going to basically vote for the government official that promises the most, and then the government official pushes the button to print the money. This is what people are starting to understand, that they need a sound store of wealth. When you go to work and you get paid for your time and energy, the only thing that will hold its value through time is Bitcoin. And that's something you're going to need to learn as you go on further. So I hope that answered the question. Now, what I want to move on to is the last part of the show today, which is a spotlight that is going on in the world, a narrative that's going on right now in the world around Bitcoin. Now, this one is an interesting one because this was a mini documentary released by the Financial Times in London. And they did a documentary on a guy called Michael Saylor, who is the CEO and chairman, or I think he's now just the CEO, I'm not sure, but he's the founder of a company that is acquiring Bitcoin at scale, is perhaps the most famous person apart from Satoshi Nakamoto in Bitcoin today. And his company basically just buys Bitcoin. And I wanted to spotlight this because I want you to see how misunderstood it is still, the asset of Bitcoin still is among financial people in the world. This is the financial editor of Financial Times talking about her experience of researching Michael Saylor's company. So I'm going to break it down just like I did with the A Current Affair video, and I'm going to explain to you why this woman, and I do like her actually, because she's quite humble and she's quite even-handed, but she demonstrates massive lack of understanding of what Bitcoin is. So let's go through the video and I'll cut to it with you and add my comments.
This is Michael Saylor. His company, Strategy, owns more Bitcoin than any other on the planet. Right now, that's about $50 billion worth. And in the crypto world, that makes him kind of a big deal.
Michael Saylor.
Michael Saylor.
Michael Saylor.
Michael Saylor.
Michael Saylor, MicroStrategy.
The man who never sells.
This company and I have some history.
Well, unfortunately, we've been talking for far too long, so we better wrap up this little podcast now.
No, I don't think so. I don't think it's time to wrap up. I think it's time to talk about Katie's stock picking results.
I was number 1,360 out of...
Ouch. I take it back. You're not a medium-sized idiot. You are a full-sized idiot.
I bombed so badly. So that was me getting roundly laughed at for coming fifth from bottom out of over 1,000 FT staff and readers in last year's FT stock picking competition. For the FT's markets columnist, that's not great. And it happened because I bet the price of shares in MicroStrategy, once a little known software company, would fall in 2024. What actually happened was that MicroStrategy's share price increased by almost 400% in a single year, massively outperforming Nvidia, Meta, Tesla, Apple, and many, many more.
At least she's got a sense of humor and she admits that she bet against the wrong guy, at least in that time period. Now, full disclosure, I put all of my superannuation into MicroStrategy in 2021, 2022, and so far it's up well over 1,000%, right? Over a 10x return, which is crazy. And that's because I've done the deep work on Bitcoin, and I believe personally that Bitcoin is going to be going up for a long, long time. Yeah. yet, because I look at that $800 trillion asset pile and I look at Bitcoin as an investable asset versus everything else in the marketplace. And in my belief, the best asset of all of them is Bitcoin. So let's carry on and we'll see what else they've got to say.
My name is Jeff Walton, also known as Punter Jeff on Twitter X. I, in the past, was a reinsurance broker, and now I'm a full-time digital capitalist, analyst on MicroStrategy, which is now known as Strategy. During that huge meteoric rise that we saw on the stock in November, Strategy raised $12 billion of capital in 50 days. It's incredibly hard to raise $100 million of capital, and they just raised $100 million of capital 120 times in 50 days. And they were able to buy Bitcoin with that capital. That's insane. They're using structured finance, and the common equity holder is saying, thank you very much. I believe in Bitcoin. I'm happy to take the downside risk because I think the downside risk is zero.
So I agree with this dude completely, right? But what I want to talk about is that what he said about how much money they raised in such a short period of time. Where did that money come from? This is exactly what I'm talking about to you guys today. You've got this enormous asset pool of $800 trillion that is constantly looking for the best place to be parked. And Bitcoin today is 26 cents of a $100 bill. If all of those assets in the world, that $800 trillion that put into $100 bill, it's 26 cents. Where this money's coming from, particularly with MicroStrategy and their business, is from big investors, institutions, bond investors that are traditionally used to terrible yields. They are starting to go, look, we need to move some of our money into these alternate investment categories. And they're starting to understand that Bitcoin doesn't have counterparty risk, like what you saw with the real estate. Let's carry on.
Bitcoin is not for the faint-hearted. With no obvious use case, it's an inherently speculative bet.
All right, so this touches on something that so many people say. Bitcoin has no inherent value. That is a really interesting statement. Let me answer that for you. I could go a million ways with this, but I'm just going to go with one. Every single human being on Earth, when you get up in the morning, you think about money. It touches your life from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to bed. The food you're eating, the car you're driving, the job that you're choosing to go to, every single one of those things is affected by money. And in exchange for money, most of us are giving up the one non-renewable thing that we have, which is time. And not only is it non-renewable, we don't know how much of it we've got. So when you spend time away from your family and you go to work, at the end of the day, you get these tokens. And those tokens are called fiat money. If you're in America, you get US dollars. If you're in Australia, you get Australian dollars. The problem is our governments are printing that stuff like crazy. And how it shows up for you is when you go down to the supermarket, you start to see everything going up. And what the governments tell us is it's the greedy corporations, but actually it's not just greedy corporations. It's the fact that the underlying fabric, the pool, the money pool that we are spending, they are always expanding it. And they've told us that this is normal. Inflation is normal. Right? And the reason they do it is so that they can keep printing money. When it comes to Bitcoin, they cannot keep printing money. And that is why over the last 16 years, Bitcoin has continued to get more and more and more valuable. Now, this is going to be a bit of a mind bender for some of you, but everything in your life hasn't gotten more expensive. I'll say that again. Over the last 10 years, everything in your life hasn't gotten more expensive. It's only gotten more expensive if you're measuring in fiat currency. So for example, if you were going to buy a house 10 years ago in Bitcoin, it might have been, I don't know what Bitcoin price was 10 years ago, but it was probably, I don't know, $100. It would have cost you thousands and thousands of Bitcoin to buy a house 10 years ago. 5 years ago, it would have been hundreds of Bitcoin. Today, the average house in Sydney, for example, is let's say $1.5 million and Bitcoin is about 150,000 Australian. So today, you only need 10 Bitcoin. to buy that house in Sydney. So if you're measuring the price of things in Bitcoin, a currency that is going up over time, while the value, our buying power of fiat currency is going down, you can see my point. So if you're still unsure of this, right, here's another way to think about it. Let's say that inflation is 5% a year, right? The Reserve Bank tells us that their target is 2.5-3, but we all know it's way higher than that, right? But let's say it's 5%. Go to ChatGPT and type in, if my inflation rate is 5% compounding for 100 years, how much is 100 Australian dollars worth in 100 years? So if you do that, the answer will come back that 100 Australian dollars in 100 years, I think it's $1.50 or something like that, right? So it is absolutely going to zero. It is losing its value. If you do it in 40 years, it's similar. Like it drops $35 of buying power. So when she says that Bitcoin has no obvious use case except storing the one thing that is our non-renewable unknown resource, which is time. If we store our time in Bitcoin, as opposed to storing it in the bank in Australian dollars, we preserve that value and grow it in time, rather than putting it into a bank and 10 years later, it's worth much less than what it was when we earned it 10 years before. And this is why people in Australia store their money in anything but cash, right? They buy property, they buy shares. This is wealthy people. They do anything but save. Savers are losers for that reason. So Bitcoin has an amazing use case, which is a long-term store of value. Yes, it has fluctuations. Yes, it goes up and down in price, but it's volatile to the upside over time. So let's move on.
How heavily exposed to MicroStrategy are you now? And in percentage terms or in dollar terms, how much money have you made out of this stock?
Over the last 2 years, my portfolio is up about 3,000%.
This is so indicative of the world we live in today. We have mainstream media that creates what we call FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. You've got a half-researched financial expert working for mainstream media telling us what we should and shouldn't be doing. Now, again, this is not financial advice, but in my opinion, it behooves you to actually learn this stuff at a deep level. Again, read the Bitcoin Standard, read the Tao of Bitcoin, read The Big Print by Larry Lepard. Get educated, because self-education is the thing that has made me a lot of money over the years, not what mainstream media tells me. You've got this woman who is actually the columnist for the Financial Times, was the worst, nearly the worst performing result, got absolutely smashed. She's the person writing the press. And this guy, who's an independent person out there doing his own research, has had thousands of percent return by backing himself. Let's move on.
Normally, when you're buying an asset, you keep quiet so you can get it at a cheap price.
But that's absolutely the opposite of what he's doing right now.
Here, MicroStrategy and Michael Saylor have been hyping Bitcoin even as they are buying more.
In their opinion, right? What these guys don't understand is that Michael Saylor believes that Bitcoin is grossly undervalued. In fact, his long-term estimation for Bitcoin in 2045 is $13 million US per coin. And if you want to learn how he gets to that, go to hope.com. You can download his whole thesis on this thing. And he explains, we've only got 21 million coins. It'll never be changed. It'll always be 21 million. Loads of them have been lost over the years before people realize the value of it. And we have this finite thing. So we have $800 trillion of capital, which is being expanded constantly by the governments around the world. And all of that money is constantly looking for the safest, best risk-adjusted returns in the world. And people are now starting to understand, as I said earlier in the video, that Bitcoin doesn't have a counterparty. There is no government that can change the rules on Bitcoin. Bitcoin doesn't care about governments. It is programmatic money that doesn't rely on trust or cooperation between governments and counterparties. It's quite extraordinary.
This gets us to a really interesting point. Company execs are not allowed to hype their own stock. But Saylor's not doing that. He's hyping Bitcoin big time. Even so, why would he fire up the price of the thing he's buying? It all comes back to that premium that investors are willing to pay for Strategy stock over and above the price of Bitcoin. So far, Strategy's shareholders have been more than happy with this approach, but there's a massive caveat here.
All of this, of course, depends on the price of Bitcoin continuing to go up and up and up, because Strategy's value and the value that all sorts of investors see in it is tied only and really only to the price of Bitcoin. No one cares about the software part of the business.
That's actually true, right? So you shouldn't invest in Bitcoin or MicroStrategy or any of these Bitcoin things long-term if you don't believe that Bitcoin fundamentally is a superior technology on a whole bunch of fronts. Superior monetary technology, a superior store of value, and all these other things. So this is why when people say to me, should I buy Bitcoin? I say, you should buy the Bitcoin Standard, the book, and you should spend at least 100 hours doing the work, learning what it really is, and then and only then allocate some of your money to it if you conclude that, yes, you believe that this thing has real value. But don't make the decision until you really understand it, because where people lose money in Bitcoin is that they buy it because they expect that it's just going to go up. And then when things go down, because Bitcoin is up and down, but are volatile to the upside, they sell. And that's where people lose their money. It's an education problem, not a Bitcoin problem. All right, let's move on to the last few parts of this.
Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you how Strategy or Bitcoin are going to perform in the future. My track record here sucks, and I genuinely have no idea. There's still a lot about this company and stock and Bitcoin that I still don't get. But hey, I've been wrong before. I can be wrong again.
And this is the part of the video that I really like, because this journalist is willing to be humble and perhaps open to learning more. And this is so important that as a Bitcoiner, we remain humble. This is a hard thing to learn. It's a hard thing to rewire, reprogram your brain around a completely new concept of money. I'm only just scratching the surface of it here in this first video. There's so much deeper that we'll go into as this show goes on. But this woman here, at least she seems open to learning more. For that reason, I give her mad respect, right? So if you are looking to learn more about Bitcoin, learn to go deeper, learn to be patient with yourself, and don't let your ego get involved. Either way, if you're a Bitcoiner, manage your ego when it's booming. It'll certainly manage it for you when it's not, right? When the crashes come and the downturns come, that'll take care of itself. But remain humble. And if you are not in Bitcoin yet, remain open. Start to say, hey, hang on, what do I really know here? Like when you really do an audit of where your opinion has come from, how many books have you read? How many people have you spoken to? How many Bitcoin meetups have you been to? And think about this, what will it really cost you if you don't do this work? If Michael Saylor's right and it goes to 13 million, or let's say he's wrong and it goes to 1 million, would that be a really expensive mistake on your part to miss? As this woman said, she didn't do the work on MicroStrategy before and she actually shorted it, and now she missed the best performing stock in the entire market for that year because she didn't do the work and understand it. So as I said at the start of this video, the mission of this show is to help you better understand Bitcoin. So I encourage you, if you've got a question, drop it in the comments and I will answer a question every time I make one of these videos, and I'll do my best to educate you in my way to get better, because I believe we're living in a time where we need to look for the SAT signal. The world is going sideways. In fact, it's not even going sideways, it's going down at the moment as people start to feel the pressure of our broken money. We're seeing record prices at checkouts. We're seeing a real reduction in the quality of our life because we have to work harder for money that buys less. And Bitcoin fixes that. It is not broken. It is finite. It is absolute. It is honest. It doesn't have politicians around it that are making promises and having to print more money to fulfill them. They're not robbing the citizens like we're seeing in Australia there with that guy running a business and they just saying, we're just going to tax the land that your business is on more to pay for our budget mismanagement. In Bitcoin, we don't have governments reaching like they're doing with superannuation in Australia, where for years they said, this is what you'll do. If you're a responsible Australian and you invest money into superannuation, instead of taking it now, if you put it towards your future so you don't become a burden on the country later, we'll give you tax incentives. And now they're saying, well, you played by the rules, but we're changing the rules. We're changing those tax incentives because we need more money. That's wrong. Whether you are going to be affected by it or not, it on a first principles basis is wrong. And that's why I believe we need a sound money, an honest money, a money that sits outside of that system where if somebody tries to change the rules on it, we can leave if we want to. I'm a freedom maximalist. I hope you've enjoyed this show. If you have, like, comment, and most importantly, subscribe to the channel so that you can get these notifications, continue your education, and drop a comment. I'll be happy to answer questions and I'll be in the comments answering there as well. Thanks for watching. Hope you enjoyed the first episode. Bye for now. Hey there, I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.